Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. I'm Carol Levine, and this is scan number 2592. That's 2592. If you want to look the show up later on, that's what you'd look for. You look for that number, 2592. Many people listen through the computers, and then we have people that call in. Tonight we have a Q&A. That's a question and answer. We do have on board a psychotherapist. Her name is Lori Golden, and she is from San Diego, California. Now, at any time, if you have a question that you'd like to ask her, please do feel free to call in. Our telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Right here at NASCA, of course, most of us on the panel, and I'm thinking maybe Chris is just a listener, or maybe he too is a survivor, but we are survivors of severe child abuse. And we offer this platform on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for people to come on and tell their stories. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have our survivor professionals, such as we have tonight. And again, her name is Lori Golden, and she, too, is an author. And she wrote My House of Lies. Does somebody have, like, a cop car going by their house or something? I don't know. But anyway.
Yes. That'd be me.
All right. So, anyway, what we do on nights like this, Chris, okay, I'm not familiar with you. I'm glad you called in. And
right.
If you have any questions, you know, maybe you're someone who went through abuse and so forth, maybe you have questions. I kind of thought so, honey. That's why you're there. All right, let me read the mission statement first, okay? And then if you want to ask some questions, we can do that. And then we can talk about a different topic also, too. I have several things we can talk about. Okay, let me get the statement out of the way, and this is NASCA. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so from two different ways, okay? And this is number one. And that's educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. It's worldwide. We know this, okay? This has been going on ever since, I hate to say this because I have Italian in me, but ever since the Roman times. Oh, we know of anyway. It's all over the world. But what we have to do is try and make that dent in the statistics of. And we'll get talking about that, too, how we can do that, okay, solutions. Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, so that's what I have to say about that. With prevention, intervention, and recovery, prevention is very, very important because if we educate our children, pedophiles do not like educated children. That's one way of fighting them because they can tell if a child knows about, you know, sexual abuse, physical, mental, emotional, which is what we all cover, and neglect. they can sense it, they can see it, okay? And a child, too, you have to understand, if they're educated by their parents, assuming if they come from good homes, okay, the parents, you should make this a part of parenting. You teach your children how to cross the street. You teach them not to talk to strangers, which is good, all right? But you also have to teach them about the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I like to say. Because with pedophiles, there's different things that they do. They can groom children, in other words, being someone who lives down the street, say, and they have their eye on one of your children, and they treat them special. There's all different kinds of things that the pedophiles do. They stand out in front of schoolyards, like mine in New York when I lived in Staten Island. I was being stalked, didn't even know it. I was just a kid. I was only 8 years old. And I was grabbed and taken far away and raped and all that other stuff. I was one of 14, and he did get caught, but he only got 3 years. And let me tell you something. That courtroom roared, the people in that courtroom. They were so mad. They were screaming he should get life, and that's what they deserve. Because they ruin kids' lives. We know this. And if you don't get the help that you need, if you don't get that help, it continues on into adulthood, childhood to adulthood, and maybe even to the grave. And what a shame. Okay. So, Chris, you had called in, and I see that Bill is here also. And Bill is the founder of NASCA. I will open up his mic.
Bill.
Well, you know, Bill. I can see that.
Yeah.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Bill, long time.
Well, I'm glad to see you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
there you go. Well, anyway, getting on with the show. Chris, is there something that you'd like to ask Lori? Her name is Lori Golden, and again, she is a psychotherapist. Is there something on your mind that maybe you have nightmares, maybe you're suffering from this or that or whatever? And she's right here. You can ask her.
Gosh, I think the question that I would actually ask is regarding prevention and education, regarding child abuse, whether sexual or physical, you know, when it comes out in the community where you are at, how would you educate the kids to interact with that community that you know one in so many is probably a pedophile or sexual predator?
You mean how would you educate? What would you talk to the kids about?
Yes. What would you tell those kids who are, say, 7 years old, having a parent or school teacher, church member sexually abuse them? Before that even happens, how would you begin to educate the kids what to look for to stay away from?
Well, you know, the first thing you would want to talk about is a good touch and a bad touch, and what's the difference. And kids really have a lot of ideas about what a good touch feels like and what a bad touch feels like. And one of the things that I think is really important when you're talking to kids is you ask them to pay attention to when you have somebody, when you get a bad touch, what does it feel like inside you? In other words, kids can feel jittery or fluttery or tight, or they want to run away. Like you talk to kids about what happens if you get a bad touch, what would you do? And again, you want to educate kids about who's safe and who's not safe, and what are the characteristics of people that they think are safe versus the characteristics of people that aren't safe. And there's a lot of different ways to talk about this, but as an adult, you have to be comfortable with bringing this out into the open. And so are you struggling at all with what you can do?
Well, I am in a different situation. I am now 40 years old. I was first physically and sexually abused when I was an infant, ongoing until I was about 8 years old before I put it to a stop, before I could put it to a stop.
That's interesting. How did you put it to a stop?
I peed in his mouth.
Okay.
While he was doing his, you know, thing to me, I saved up some pee and I peed in his mouth.
How smart was that? Congratulations.
Pissed him off, but got him to stop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is it, what is your concern about your community or talking to children?
It's being
Are you involved
to,
with children?
Identify these perpetrators in public from a distance.
Yeah. Yeah, you have good creep sensors.
Yeah, what they are more like from a distance rather than up close and personal and being able to observe what their eyes are wandering to if there are children around.
Mhm. Yes. But are you interested in educating children or talking to children about this?
Gosh, I don't know at this moment.
Okay. Well, you know, when we talk about helping children, you don't have to be directly talking to children. You can be an adult survivor speaking out about your experiences. And
yes,
that's one way to educate communities.
Is this just by talking about it in groups of people?
That you're a survivor and speaking out. That's why the more survivors of sexual abuse or any abuse, the more survivors speak out, the more we can educate as a collective group of people in the community. And because there's still a lot of educating that needs to happen with adults. And Carol said something really important. We're comfortable helping children with stranger danger, you know, but we're not comfortable educating children about good and bad touching and who to trust and who not to trust. So it's interesting, you know, we need more of that in the school systems. I know Erin, I think Erin Merrin has been educated, you know, calling for new laws about instilling in the school program sexual, you know, issues around sexual and other kinds of abuse.
The more we make the children aware, the more they're going to grow up to be healthier.
Yes, but the way you make
adults.
Yes, so you can do that in many different. I know Carol, you can share about that because I know you've done a lot of work, haven't you, with children?
Mm-hmm. I have actually. I'll tell you something, Chris. You know the website, right? NAASCA.org, NASCA.org website?
Yes.
I should mention that out loud anyway to people. I want everyone who's interested in helping children and educating children to get really educated with our website, because if you go under certain areas, you know, if you scroll down a little bit, you see the red lines, and we have different titles. One thing that they do mention, I want to say two things here. In a family unit, they suggest that mothers and fathers role play, okay, and so that they feel comfortable with speaking to children about their bodies and also about the good touch, the bad touch, and all the other things that you're talking about there. Now, that's in a healthy family, okay? A lot of it comes from...
In a healthy family.
Yeah, I've been there, too. I know what you're talking about. But, you know, as far as community is concerned, okay, one thing that I do is I do make copies. I go to our website, and I, under prevention, you know, it had many times it has the red flags of child abuse, you know, or what they might, how children might be behaving. And I make copies. Anything you see that could be, would be, you know, good for the community to know, I make copies. And it doesn't take long. You have a copy machine, just make some copies. So you go into, like, places like ShopRite or other places like that, or just stores, wherever you think people might, you know, say, hello, how are you? And then you talk to them a little bit. You say you're a representative from NASCA, okay? And you show them, can I please hand this to you, and would you pin it up so that people can see this? You see, the key word here is education, okay? Yeah. Now, since you're asking about education, this is one way we can educate the public, because if we go to daycare centers, like I do, everything's closed right now. We're going through a pandemic. But just to give you some examples, universities are very good places to go to, because don't forget, those people there, a lot of them are going to become doctors, lawyers, or they're going to become social workers, or whatever the case might be. Many times they don't have the knowledge about child abuse, and I've been asked to speak in many different areas with that, in colleges and so forth, also in Sussex County. So it wasn't just Hackettstown, it was over in Sussex County, Bill. But anyway, the point is, I always make sure I have lots of paperwork on me, and I present myself as being a NASCA representative. You can get cards right off the, off of our emails. If you go into the NASCA, you'll see there's an area there where you can order cards. I happen to have friends that make my cards, and I will show them my card. You can have them personalized with your name, or you can have it just a regular NASCA card. It has information on it. You hand the card. You give them signs of child abuse. And they can have that, okay? And what they do is they read it over, and they get educated by it, and they pin it up on their bulletin board. And then every time someone goes to the bulletin board, think how many people look at bulletin boards in stores. Some guys want to buy motorcycles. Some guys want to buy cars. People want to sell their homes, whatever. You have that there also. And so when they're looking around, they see that, and they go, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I just learned something new about this, that. And there's an awful lot of information for people to learn right on the NASCA website. So, I ask people to really get to know the website, and it covers so many different things. So maybe that'll be helpful to you. If you want to become, like, proactive, and I'm hoping that people do become proactive because that's part of the solution, as far as we can go with it, because we're never going to stop it, Chris. You know this. But we can educate public so it can slow it down and make the dent, as I like to say, in the statistics of.
Yes.
And that's one way of fighting, you know, child abuse and getting, well, you know, getting people aware of what pedophiles, you know, you asked a question before. How can we spot a pedophile from distance? Look around you, especially schoolyards, any place where kids congregate. If you see a guy or a woman, remember, Chris, it can be a gal, too. It can be a lady also. If they're
right.
Too interested, yeah. If they're too interested in watching children, if they don't speak to adults, or maybe they're taking pictures, and you're really supposed to ask permission first when you take pictures of children, say like at a school or whatever, and you tell them who you are. If it's your child who's in the soccer team or baseball team or whatever, people are going to take pictures, and that's understandable. But watch the demeanor of people that are, you're standing near, they're going to be looking at children all over, up and down, and sideways, and all this other stuff. They may even start to follow children. Yeah. And they're looking
all
for their prey. That's P-R-E-Y, prey. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. While I have the question available to you, what would you tell those kids who are children of, say, law enforcement, like judges and DAs, lawyers? Who, you know, and they make their kids afraid to reach out for help.
All right. Well, children are afraid to. Let Lori answer that. Go ahead, because this is
no,
really
no,
her show.
Go on. No.
Okay.
Go on.
What I tell the professionals, all right, or people who, you know, are mandated reporters or whatever, it's good to, if they'd only hold like an auditorium once every 3 months, and do it age appropriately. And I would suggest this, and I have suggested this in schools, the do's and the don'ts and what to look out for. And for children who are afraid to tell someone, say it's happening in their family, all right? There's incest going on. Maybe they're a victim themselves of incest. What I usually tell them to do is find another trusted adult. And it's hard for kids to trust adults if they're being abused by an adult, let's face it. But, you know, they might have, and they're afraid to go to relatives because that relative, you know, might go directly to the person who's abusing them, and maybe they've threatened them. So if they can find someone outside of the family unit that they trust, maybe someone at a church or someone, some person down the street, a neighbor that they trust, maybe they play with their children or whatever, just someone, an adult, and they feel comfortable with speaking to them, they should talk to them, okay? And hope, you know, they have to have the right telephone number. I always tell people online or wherever I do a presentation, that can be in churches, that can be in schools, I always tell them, 1-800 for a child is a very good number to call. I deal with them. That's 1-800 for the number 4, a child. And if you call them, they can direct you. In fact, they have been known to call people right in your own area. You can remain anonymous. You don't even have to give your name, okay? And so for children, if they, you know, do take that first step, and that's very, very important and also quite frightening for a child to do that, to tell someone, very frightening. If they make that first step and they call, you know, talk to the lady or to the man, whomever this person might be, and they call that number, or if they want to deal locally, you can remain anonymous with them. So also, you can. You tell them, I want to remain anonymous. And they will make the necessary calls. So 1-800-4-CHILD, that's the national hotline service. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, find the child has to find someone that they feel comfortable with. I don't know what it was like in your situation, Chris. In mine, it was a distant aunt. I say distant because she wasn't related through blood. She was, it was through marriage. And surprisingly enough, she was a drunk, but she was a funny drunk. She used to make me laugh a lot. And she said to me, though, she looked at me, she says, Carol, there's something wrong with you. She said, I don't know what it is, but remember, I'm always your friend. So I lucked out. I lucked out. And I didn't tell her right away, Chris. Yeah, I did. I didn't tell her right away because I've been told I'd be killed, you know, if I told, okay? And this so often is the case. So I waited a while. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. Had enough, a year and a half of it. That's enough for me. And I told her, and she, even though she was drunk, she did the right thing. So, and got me out of there. So the point is to let children know that if there's trouble in the home, that to find someone that they feel like they can trust, you know, and they'll make the phone calls. If I was a kid, I'd probably go to a teacher or maybe to a church member, and they would, you know, they're mandated reporters if they see something wrong, okay? And that's two suggestions right there. If they go to just a neighbor, my fear is that the neighbor will go to the parent, and that wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't usually mention that. It's better to go, you know, to someone in a church, or they're not going to go to the police department. Many times children are afraid of police. So, you know, it's better. And the police department, they're limited, although they will get a hold of, say, like DIFUS or somebody, some other organization. But not too many kids would do that. So I would say, again, either into a church or maybe a Boy Scout, or no, I won't use Boy Scout, Girl Scout leaders. Someone, I know, but, you know, someone they could feel comfortable with and just open up, a teacher. A school
right.
nurse.
And
a school nurse. That's a good one. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Being the times that we are in where
mm-hmm.
judges are even guilty of sex trafficking.
Right.
What would you say to the judge's children?
Well, I saw a judge actually step down. And fortunately, in this case, this was up in Vermont. Okay, he was in Vermont. A judge had let a pedophile go just on probation. Eight-year-olds are very much, many times, targeted. But 8-year-old boy was being sexually abused constantly by this pedophile. And finally, the child told, and it went to court, and it was he gave him probation, and that was it. Well, the family went nuts, the townspeople went nuts, and it got hit the newspaper. And then what happened was the newspaper, okay, filed. They what they did was they went, and everywhere this judge went, they followed him. They followed him. If he went into the men's room, okay, in the courthouse, they went in too. They were firing things at him, saying nasty things or whatever. I wasn't there. I didn't hear it. But they made that judge so upset. And they followed him home, of course. They followed him everywhere he went, and he stepped down. You see, if we had more people being proactive, you know, then I think things would help in a lot of different cases, whether it be judges like you just mentioned. Of course, there's going to be bad judges, just like there's good police and there's bad police. More good than bad, though, okay? Whomever, whatever organization, you have the good and you have the bad and you have the ugly. But we have to keep in mind that we're dealing with a child. So the first, you know, thing to do is for people to educate their children, you know, what signs to look for. If a neighbor is being too friendly and spending too much time with them, watch out. Go to your mother, go to your father. Again, a good home, okay? Go to your mother, go to your father, and let them know that they're making you feel uncomfortable. But in good homes, Chris, education starts at home.
Yeah, it should.
And in good homes, okay? So what they have to learn to do is to get over the embarrassment. And for God's sake, God gave us a head, he gave us shoulders, he gave us breasts. If you're a girl, he gave you a vagina. If you're a boy, he gave you the penis. Remember, children are very receptive, much more so than the adults realize. And their minds are like little sponges.
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the parents learn, do the role playing first, and if the parents get over their own embarrassment, because a lot of times that's why things don't get said. Oh, I don't want my kid to hear that stuff. Now I want them to be innocent for as long as they can be. Oh, they'll find out. Their kids, the friends will tell them, you know, whatever they come out with. It's lunacy, because they'll find out, all right. Maybe they'll get kidnapped or maybe whatever. So you see, that's not helpful. So parents can start the education right in the home, and children will sort of like let you know when they're ready. That's many times a question that's asked. You're giving a child a bath, and, you know, maybe the child is maybe 3, 4 years old, 4 years old. Mommy, what's this? Daddy, what's that? Whatever the case might be. You tell them your body parts. You know, don't be ashamed, because if you're ashamed, they'll be ashamed, and they won't go to the parents for help. You see, it starts at home. I hope I answered some of your questions there. So, everyone, they should get, you know, look at the NASCA website. Tear it apart. Don't be afraid to tear it apart and learn whatever you can, because that'll answer many of your questions. And I'll be teaching and educating the public, because that's what we need to do. Remember, go into stores. Make copies, Chris. If you want to become proactive, and this is what we need for NASCA members to do, is become proactive. Make copies. Don't be scared or anything. Go into, and you should have a card, though, because that makes you look better. And say that you're a representative from NASCA. And hand them a piece of paper and say, ShopRite is very, very good that way. Do you have a ShopRite near you? A food
like
store,
a grocery
ShopRite?
Store?
Yeah.
A grocery store? Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Now, the ShopRite that I have near me, and I find this to be very interesting, and I hope it's true of all the other grocery stores, but the people upstairs that, you know, up by the cameras and their business, the administrators, the ones that own the stores or run the stores, whatever, they actually have to go for courses now, not for long, just maybe 2 or 3, because don't forget, a lot of times in a store you'll see kids getting smacked in the head by their parent or whatever. They're being mistreated in a store by the parent. So they're taught the signs of child abuse. And remember, it's not always sexual. It's sexual, physical, mental, emotional, or neglect. So they're actually, they become the ones that take the courses. It's a mini course. They become like a mandated reporter. And if they see something, they have to make a phone call. And then also, too, remember, not only they do, they many times they have people who work in security, the security officers. Security officers, too, are mandated reporters. They can be, you bet. So if yeah. stores are educated, and if the parents are educated, and if the school system becomes educated, I work in the universities when I can, nothing now because of the COVID. But if the school system would just let their walls down a little bit, there's always so much red tape, like an elementary school.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where it starts. Come on. We those are the children, you know, who really need, you know. I know this. I know this. But and you know who the problem is many times? I heard of a school, that elementary school, that wanted to have people like we, the survivors of, you know, our group right here, come in and talk to the children age appropriately and also to educate the teachers. But you have to send a note home to the parents and let them know that this would happen. Well, many of the parents said no. See, there's the problem.
That is what the problem is often.
Yes. Yes. So that's why I always end up working with, more, you know, adults, you know, and, you know, college kids, and it's and high school. High school is okay. But that goes in a different form. And Lori will know this, because you can, like, they let you come in and talk about date rape.
And we need teachers who are not going to be embarrassed to talk about it.
You're right.
That is what I remember going through my childhood, is that the school systems were embarrassed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
in reflection, that almost says, whoa, maybe you are doing it.
Well, they're doing disservice to children by being that way. Because,
which,
you know,
there's an ulterior motive of why.
Right. Still. I'll give you an example, and I'm going to turn this then over to Lori. One summer when I was living in Phillipsburg, I knew that they were going to have volunteers come in and work with the kids for baseball and softball and for the girls, and also to start thinking about fall, so for football. I asked them if they did a background check on these volunteers. Let's just say, argument's sake, there were 10 of them. Well, no, they hadn't. And I said, why haven't you? You don't know them from Adam. So that made them think. So then they did their background check, and they made it a policy where they had to do a background check on the individuals that were going to come in and work with the children. So you see, sometimes they need to have awareness. You have to, because they don't think, you know, and because of that, again, children are more at risk. So I think that, all, you know, you can go to schools. You can hand out information. I did that to a elementary school, and they looked at me like I was from Mars. The lady made me stand at the desk. I could see the principal from her desk, and they were treating me like I was like an alien, okay, like there's something to be afraid of or whatever. And then the guy poked his head out and looked at me and was looking me up and down. I said, hey, I'm here to help educate you, to make you think. So I laid the paperwork, I had quite a few copies, laid it down on the desk, and I said, think about it. And if you want to engage me or use me, I don't charge. If you want me to come and speak to your children, I'm available. I never heard from them. You see, they probably sent the notes home, Lori, if they went that far.
Yeah.
And the parents said, no.
That's what happened. Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
So you take it from here.
Block it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have to take it from here. I'm fine listening to you. It's good information.
Well, I've been doing
no,
it for
really,
many years.
No, really, you're giving good information. Is there anybody else on the line that might want to chime in? Has anybody else called?
No, actually, Chris is here. Pamela is here, but... she's a part of the panel tonight.
Okay. How are you doing, Pamela?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now that we got that over with.
Yeah.
I always say, so how are you really doing?
Yeah.
Well, Pamela is a... She's a part of the organization, honey, she's Pamela. I don't know if you two know each other or not, but she is a part of NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
and Bill,
I wanted to ask Chris if he's been on the if he's told this story before.
I have told my story on the show a couple years ago. It's been a while.
All right. Well, we'd like to have you come back on if you would, and just go on the NASCA front page. And my name's Pamela Lockridge, and I'll book you in.
Go on to the website.
Yeah, go on to the website and look for my name. I book people in to tell their stories, and we'd love to hear your updated story.
All right.
Okay.
I think that would be great. I would love to hear it, too. Because I don't think I was here. No, I wasn't. I wasn't here, I don't believe, that night when he told his story. So I would love to have him on also. And Bill, he's sitting here listening. I'm sure he'd be happy, too. So, no.
Bill,
Dan,
is Bill on?
Well,
yes, I am. I
Oh, hello.
I'm waiting to see if I'm going to get called on here. I'm trying not to butt in.
Oh, no. Yeah, go ahead.
We're all part of this family. That doesn't mean we don't want to share. In fact, just the opposite. It may mean that we do want to share. So, it's always wonderful to hear Lori's perspective, but we got to let her give some of it a little bit too, I feel. That's how I feel anyway. Because, you know, she's got a lot to offer. And anyway, it's always delightful to have you on the show, Lori. I always look forward to your appearance, which is once
Thank
a month,
you.
As people should know. No, you're welcome. Once a month you're on. It's the second Tuesday of each month. And so that's tonight. Yeah, NASCA's doing well. We'd love to have, you know, people who haven't appeared in a year or two come back, just to cap off what was just said. And Pamela, you may not know Pamela because she's newer than 2 years ago, at least as an active coordinator for the radio show, and that's what she does. So it says this on the front page of the website is what she's trying to tell you, and that would be new to you if you haven't looked for a while. So, Chris, go to the radio area of the front page of the website, and you'll find her name and her email address and so forth, and she'll set you up, all right?
All right.
Great.
That's good. That's good, Gwen. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, what would you like to talk about, Lori? I look at your bio here, and you've got quite a bio. You were a survivor, I believe, of incest. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I was a survivor of incest. My father started sexually abusing me when I was 5, and it didn't stop until I was 16. And, you know, I remember being at school, particularly I was always in the slowest reading group because I couldn't concentrate on anything. And, of course, back then, because I'm 70, so back then there was absolutely no understanding of PTSD or disassociation. So I remember when I was called to the reading tutor, and I would just be looking at her, wanting so badly for her to see what was wrong, you know, and I was just too frightened to say anything. And, you know, I didn't speak out until I got off of drugs. And that's when I remembered I was a sexual abuse survivor. I mean, I was sexually abused. I had no memory whatsoever. And I created this picture in my mind of the kind of family life I had. And I always described it in these really loving, I have the greatest family. I mean, I remember being in college and telling, you know, my friends in college what a wonderful family I had. Of course, I was popping pills as I was telling people what a wonderful family I had. But I didn't remember at all. I had complete amnesia. So if anyone is listening and has had amnesia with their abuse, it can be extremely rattling and frightening to start having memories and then to realize if you've been incested that it's your father. You know, when I realized it was my father, it took about 6 months. And it was horrifying to me.
Yeah, my mom raised me believing that I was imagining things.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm mentally ill because these things are happening.
Did you always remember, Chris?
Yes, there will always be memories. They come in flashbacks now that it's been resurfaced to the front of my memory.
Mm-hmm. But when you were growing up, did you tell anybody while you were a kid?
I may have and not remembered, you know, fresh on my memory to know that I told somebody. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have
but
you
I'm
done?
I'm on the NASCA.org website. Where am I supposed to go to? Contact list?
No. A little lower than that, about halfway down the page, there's a section of the front page that discusses the radio show. And the illustration there is a microphone. And if you see that, you will see that we are trying to book guests for the future and that Pamela Lockhart is doing that work, and it gives you her email address.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Okay.
I
think one of the something that has been was extremely healing for me was really telling my story over and over and over again, not just once, not just twice, but really repeatedly telling my story. It's the one thing that I think helps us to heal from shame and secrecy, and it gives us a chance to be a part of the outside world again, because the more you tell your story, the more other people can relate to it. And I speak very openly with neighbors and with anybody that I have been in contact with about the whole area of sexual abuse and incest. And there's a lot of us out there.
Lori?
Yeah. I want to mention that there's a 931 area code. Hold on. This person has just
Darlene.
Called in about 5 minutes ago.
I got it. It's Darlene.
Oh, okay.
Darlene.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, baby. How you doing? Okay.
I'm okay. It's pretty noisy here, so that's why I got it on mute.
Okay. Go ahead. What you were saying. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Miss Pamela.
I don't even know. No, who was talking? I don't even remember.
Pamela,
were you talking?
I was trying to talk to Lori about when she was saying, telling her story over and over again, and telling any person. I found that when I would tell church people or other people, it's like they didn't want to hear it. You know, they just shut me down. And I finally figured out that talking to survivors is the best thing.
Well, remember, I'm a therapist, and I feel like it's more my responsibility, more than anything, to educate people whenever I'm out and about and I have an opportunity to share about it. You know, I've talked very openly in my 12-step program, and a lot of people don't, you know, but I've shared very openly about being an incest survivor and what it's been, you know, what my life has been like. And yes, there are people that don't want to hear about it, no question about it.
Right.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
Well, what I'm saying is you should go through the right avenues. You shouldn't just go to anybody because they can't relate to it and it freaks them out, you know.
Well, you don't
you're
go
in
up
support
to anybody.
Group. Right.
Yeah.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
I have talked very openly with extended family. I've talked very openly with people, my son, you know, at my son's school, you know, just wherever I've had experiences where I can connect with people, eventually that is something that I will bring into a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And again,
I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
You have
you know
to
what?
Be comfortable. Right.
When you're going to a 12-step meeting or a therapist or a counselor or you're asked to speak at a group meeting which is about recovery, you're expected to tell your story. Otherwise, you want to be careful about not losing the possibility of having someone listen for a little while. So you could touch on the fact that you're a survivor, that you're a volunteer for NASCA, for example, and what NASCA is about, and that you yourself are a survivor, and then be quiet and see if they ask you, oh, really, how did you what happened to you? And if they ask, then you reply. Just tell them a little bit, though, at a time, so you can kind of gauge whether you're going to trigger them and have them run away. You don't want to do that because you want to, maintain the opportunity as long as you can. But in a recovery meeting, like a 12-step meeting, I mean, you're there for you. You're expected to talk as honestly as you want, in those meetings. So nobody should be offended when you talk about the fact that, yeah, you were a huge drinker and drug user, and part of the reason for doing that was you were abused as a child. You can say that.
Right.
That's not a problem.
Right.
So I agree, though, that telling the story over and over and over and over again makes it lose the authority and power it has over you. But it increases your ability to tell the story in a way that makes sense for, say, a newer person, somebody that's not educated, and be gentle with them, is what I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't just blurt out my story. It's people that I connect with, and somewhere at some point, I've always felt comfortable just bringing in that topic of where I've been.
Well,
sure.
That's what I'm trying to, I guess, tell you. I was the opposite before I got into therapy and healing. I didn't start getting my repressed memories and start healing till my 50s. And so, to hold that in sometimes was hard. And I would, tell a Christian person that I thought I was close to, and they would just ignore me. They wouldn't even talk to me. I mean, they didn't unfriend me, but, they just couldn't. They wouldn't respond to it. And I was like, "What? Why can't they respond to this?" And so what I was
because
doing was actually showing the people that did not want to hear this, that couldn't.
Yeah,
and there are people.
They're stunned. When you say something sometimes.
But
I'm sorry,
Lori,
go ahead.
I had to learn it,
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what Lori's saying, though, too, is she is a psychotherapist, And I pick my places that I go to. I want to get that out there. I think I said it earlier, but I'll say it again. I pick my places that I go to, to see if they're interested in, the survivorship and the people that come in who can tell their stories. I told mine in the church once, Pamela, I did. It was called the Alliance Church, Alliance. And they don't care what nationality you are, you're anything, you can be Catholic, they don't care what you are. And did very well with that. Okay, so no, you don't just go blurt it out to everybody. I chased a lady down the street one time.
Oh, by the way,
go ahead.
No, I was saying, you're standing on Starbucks line. Oh, by the way, I'm an incest survivor. No, you can be very selective, but what I have found, whenever I've talked about my drug addiction openly or my being an incest survivor openly, people always share similar stuff. Oh, I was sexually abused, or I had a neighbor, or, people just open up when you're comfortable with the material.
Right. Right. I agree.
Yeah, people do. They open up.
Well, Lori,
I would too, which reminds me before I hang up.
Okay.
I'm having difficulties finding where to go online. May I just give my email address out in the open?
Yeah.
Pamela can write it down then, and she can write to you. Right, Pamela?
Yeah.
You got a pencil?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. What is it, Chris?
All right. My email address is dscramuzzo@gmail.com.
Okay, you're going to have to slow down and say a military term.
All right. It's Charlie C. Sierra.
Sierra?
Yes.
S.
Charlie Sierra Charlie Romeo Alpha Music Umbrella Zebra Zebra Oscar.
Okay, I know you. You're Charlie Scamusa, right? Charlie I know how to reach you. I think I know you on Facebook.
Maybe.
And I think I even texted you about coming on the show or messaged you. You're on Facebook.
Yes, I am on Facebook.
Okay.
All right, so she's
going to
get in touch with you, Charlie, and we'll set you up for a future date. But we like it when people who have appeared with us in the past come back and kind of give us an update of what they've done in the last 2 years and where they are today.
Right.
Thank you, Pamela.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Thanks,
have a good night.
Okay, bye, Chris.
God bless.
God bless you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. No, that's good. You see, he's going to come on the show. And I didn't hear him the first time, so I'm interested in hearing him, you know, hearing his story. Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, you bet. So
you know,
what else would
what
you
I find,
go ahead.
No matter how many times I hear people's stories, they're always unique. Even though we have similar things to say, it always feels like everybody sharing their story is unique, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I love hearing
people's
stories.
Our stories are not the same, but we all have the same feelings, you know? I mean, we suffer trauma, terrible trauma. And, you know, here at NASCA, we don't take a yardstick. You know, if someone's been abused, I had someone once say to me, it only happened one time. Much one time too many.
Right.
And they can suffer just as much as if we, you know, if they were, you know, abused 100 times. So, you know.
Well, what happens often, people downplay their abuse because it only happened one time. But when you're a child and that one time happens, it sets you up for mistrust, for fear, because if one adult can do something, then other adults can do things. And so you never feel safe after that. It sets you up for an unsafeness. And then if you can't tell anybody, then it sets you up for living in secrecy, that you have a dark secret inside you, and that separates you from people. So one time is one time too many.
That's right. That's right.
It shouldn't happen, period. But I often have people come in and will say, it only happened one time, as if that's not, or I wasn't raped, I was just, you know, touched. Or people have just so many different ways to minimize their experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really do.
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. And that's something that we talk about on NASCA, too. you know, like with kids, they have all different ways of displaying, you know, abuse. And if it's little kids, like we have a page on our website that that shows the ways that children may you know, react after they've been abused. They may be too sexual, you know, come out with words that they shouldn't know. I've heard of some children actually going up and rubbing against furniture, you know, because they want something to touch their areas. And, you know, things like that. So, with little kids, they can kill animals. That absolutely blew me away because I love animals. I love them better than people. I really do. And, you know, the thought of a child abusing an animal, you know, that to me was horrifying when I first learned that years ago. They have all different kinds of ways. They'll become very inward. They might have been a bubbly child, and then all of a sudden they become an inward child. So there's just all different kinds of things that we can learn right from the website. And then it goes over to the teenagers, and they're more, you know, apt to suffer from bulimia or anorexia, or they'll run away or skip school, things like that. So much to learn.
And, you know, kids, bright, you know, my test scores never made sense to my teachers because I came off as brighter. So they were always trying to figure out what was wrong. And it is such a horrible thing to be a student and feel like you're not up to par with other students and compare yourself, because I did. I compared myself to all my other friends who were really good readers and fast readers. And I remember just always thinking I was stupid and there was something wrong with me. And there wasn't. I was abused. I had disassociation at a young age.
Well, so many times we talk about that where, you know, kids can't concentrate. They're going to school, and it should be a safe haven for them, but they can't concentrate, you know. And it's not because they're dumb or anything like that. It's because they know what's going to happen maybe when they go home, you know. And so a lot of times they come across as being, you know, inward or you know, a lot of times they will, they're troubled and they can't concentrate. It's really a terrible thing what child abuse does to people, you know.
It really is a terrible thing.
Let's go to Pamela. I'm going to keep my mouth shut, and let's see what Pamela has to say, and then go to Bill, and I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
I'm just listening. You can go ahead and go to Bill.
Okay, let's go to Bill then.
Let's ask Darlene if she brought something with her or if she wants to bring something up, because sometimes she does have something with her. Darlene, how about you?
Yes, she does.
You might be muted, Darlene.
She's muted.
She had mentioned that. Yeah, she had mentioned that earlier, that she was muting herself, I think. She'll come on when she wants to. But anyway, okay, well, Bill, is there something you'd like to speak about?
Let's see. I don't have anything jump to mind. Christina, is anything you'd like to hear talked about? No, thank you, she says in a little tiny voice.
No, thank you.
Don't you make fun of her.
Oh, God. Well, I'll say something here. You know, the Super Bowl was just, was it yesterday? Oh, my God, whatever, 2 days ago. A lot of times we don't talk about the trafficking of boys. And that's one thing that I learned about, you know, with trafficking. It's they always think of girls. They don't think of boys. And, my God, the amount of money. Oh, the boys are... Yeah. They make millions of dollars, these people. They were actually talking about the spectators in an article that I had read. And the spectators many times are the Johns, okay? So they watch the game, and they've already paid ahead, you know, for the girls or boys that they want. And then what happens is after it's all over with, then these children are prepared ahead of time, you know, to go with these people. It's a horrifying thing. And also, too, the article did mention that it's not just a Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has the most problems with that, okay? I'll word it that way, where most of the problems are. But then there's other things like hockey, there's soccer, the big events. Wherever there's big events and there's a lot of money where people are going to buy, good tickets, there's a lot of rich people that go there. And and after that, the children, my God, there's so many that are trafficked out and are used in that sense. And I think it's a horrifying thing. So, look at the world that we live in, Lori. Look at the world that we live in.
It's
really horrifying.
Scary. Yeah, it is.
Yes.
And with the internet, it's very, I think there are so many areas now that we can't keep up with. And it's very scary. Very scary. I mean, when people put pictures up of their children on the internet, I get like, you know, you really need to be careful, you know, because you never know who's going to be looking if you don't realize the settings that you're on. And I just think there's so many areas now that, I mean, San Diego has a really big thing with trafficking. Trafficking, sex trafficking. It's really a big business.
It's a huge
business.
Well, if we didn't have the Johns, you see that? I think the Johns should be held so much more accountable and even imprisoned. Because, you know, if you don't have them there, then you're not going to have the need for the business, you know. And those people are getting so wealthy off of the Johns. It's a disgusting thing.
Yep.
I have an article here that says sex trafficking, from what I've seen in my research, is more prominent than labor trafficking. And women and girls make up about 98% of sex trafficking victims. Now, the other, of course, is they're speaking about men. But, well, when I say men, I mean boys, okay? So when it comes to child sex trafficking in the United States, the percentage of male victims is a lot higher. It says, this study here was from 2010. They found that at least 50% of sexually trafficked children in New York City were boys. See, people don't think about that.
They don't.
And so it's a horrific thing, and so I don't get happy. I won't even watch it when the Super Bowl comes around. When I found this out years ago, how much sex trafficking was going on, to me it was like dirty business. You know, I thought to myself, there they sit there, and then they watch the game, and they're getting enjoyment out of that, and then because the people of wealth and they have a certain amount of money, they get other types of enjoyment afterwards. So, you know, the whole thing is pretty darn sickening as far as I'm concerned. So I didn't watch, no. Yeah.
Yes. I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't stop me. I watched the game.
What did you say? Oh, it didn't stop you from watching?
I can't hear him.
I said it didn't stop me. I watched the game.
Go to them, big
old. Oh, now I heard you. Well, you dirty old man, you. There you go.
Oh, please. See, that's not right. I mean,
Well, you bust me. I have to bust you back. Go ahead.
I'm not busting you. I didn't bust you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
What I did want to say is that the vast, you know, majority of people who sit in those stands are not pedophiles. It's true that no matter where you go, there are groups of people who are older adults who are interested in having sex with children. It's about, you know, it's about that. I think it's about 6% of the population. And, you know, that sounds like a small number, but actually it's not, because every predator has, you know, scores and scores of victims over their life.
Yeah.
So that's why we have, you know, 30% of our population is being abused by 6% of our population, or something like that. You know, but, you know, I just don't want to scare people away. What is that?
I don't know.
A lot of noise.
It's not me.
Not me
either. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't want to scare people away from living their social life on account of pedophilia exists. It does exist. And it exists everywhere, frankly.
It exists everywhere, and you just have to know how to keep yourself safe. That's really what
it's
about.
Yeah.
And how to keep the children you're with safe.
I think it was interesting when Chris was here, he was trying to get at something specific, it sounded like, and maybe in his life, I don't know, or something he knows, related to judges and lawyers and judges specifically. But I'll tell you, every group has pedophiles in it. And,
absolutely.
And also, it's also true that in every group, the majority of people are not pedophiles. That's also true. So I just want to make sure we tell the honest, you know, we're honest to the public that there is no safe place, completely safe place, which is why, as Chris was trying to say, we educate our kids as early as possible is our recommendation, starting from the time they're able to start to talk, you know, but carrying it on throughout their life. Make the main thing, making them know that there are certain things they should be aware of, yes, but if any of those, God forbid, should happen to them, that they should talk, they should tell, they should come to mom or dad, they should go to the minister or the priest or the police officer. I mean, most police officers are not pedophiles. They want to help if a kid comes up to them and says, somebody's bothering me, and so forth. So that's, you know, it's really important. And then, you know, as far as teaching our own children, I think the main message is, I'll love you no matter what. Because it's the fear that the child is going to be judged that stops the child from speaking up to begin with. They think they did something wrong, or that they're somehow responsible, or that it's a too ugly thing for mommy to continue to love me if I bring it up. None of that's true. And we need
and
to be
you know,
telling
what's interesting, Bill, is that that's exactly what adult survivors feel when they start coming in contact with their own, you know, their own issues around abuse, sexual abuse. They feel dirty, they feel embarrassed, ashamed, that it was their fault. They must have done something for that to have happened. And so, you know, as children, we feel that, but we grow up to be adults feeling that. There is so much self-blame when it comes to child, you know, thinking of ourselves as survivors. It looks like we want to blame ourselves for it, because no one's taking responsibility for it, especially if it's going on in your family. And if no one's taking responsibility, then you must be the one that's at fault. You just assume you're the guilty party.
A lot of times the behaviors that we start off with, we get in childhood that are a result of having been abused, definitely, they are the same behaviors that as we grow older, we continue to have.
It's not different in adulthood. It's the same behaviors. And that's why we make a differentiation between the point at which we get into we get on our healing journey, you know, and stop being so much of a victim, you know, and as a survivor, then there's a period of time when we are hungry to do whatever we can to progress in our own health, in our own comfort, and in our own recovery. But until that time, when we start telling our story in a healthy way with the right kind of people, we're going to continue that behavior. And it'll resurface, too, some of it. You know, the embarrassment. I was embarrassed, you know. I mean, that's a horrible feeling. But that I also had a fear of abandonment, that if I brought it up, people would turn away from me. That's a horrible feeling, you know.
Yeah,
and when I had tried to tell to people I thought would be the right people and they didn't respond right, it kind of shut me down, which is why I always want the message that goes to children in childhood about prevention, that if you tell and you're not heard, tell again, and you're not heard, tell again. Keep telling until you find the adult who will be helpful, because the first, second, third one you tell might not be helpful, but the fourth one will. You know, somebody will hear you when you tell the right person. So keep telling is the last thing I make sure to tell these kids, you know.
Yep.
Well, Bill, that's we've been saying that for years, but I think what happens at times is sometimes kids will unfortunately pick the wrong person to tell. And they'll get angry with them, and they'll say, "You should be tougher. You should be tougher about this." And this is what I'm talking about: men now and children, all right, and little boys, because when children do get up the courage to talk to someone, they have to tell. We've said an average of 7. Remember, we've said that before, probably around 7 times before someone's going to listen to us. A lot of kids.
Well, I didn't ever have anybody tell me I should have been tougher. What I had was people who I told, and some of them I told a lot of detail to, who it turned out couldn't be trusted, or who looked back at me with a face that was blank, like they didn't know what I was talking about, which they didn't. So I just didn't tell the right people. I mean, as a child, how do you measure who's the right person? You know, you just got to keep doing it until you hit on one. And I finally did, but boy, it was so frustrating. And that started in childhood and ended up in, you know, in my 30s. I finally was able to find a group of people, a lot of people who, like me, were damaged in childhood and, you know, and needed to recover from it.
That's right. But it is harder for boys. You know, it absolutely is. And, girls usually have a big mouth. Like me, I have a big mouth. We all know this. But, you know, like, it's easier for us somehow to latch on. Not very easy. I don't want to get it wrong. But it's easier for us to speak somehow about our abuse. We'll find someone. Like, I chose my aunt. And I didn't tell her right away. I took a few weeks, and it was the 4th of July. And, boy, more things hit the sky than the 4th of July fireworks, because I let her know. And I didn't know what she was going to do with that information. I wasn't even sure if she was going to remember it because she was so drunk. But she did. And, you know, so the next day was like a horror story. But the point is, boys, they're programmed almost. If something happens to them, they have to be macho. You know, over it.
I wasn't brought up that way. I don't think that's true. I mean, I really.
That's what we've heard many times. Go ahead.
I'm a boy. Okay, so I have a boy's experience.
Are you a boy? Good. I have to tease him or I'm not happy. Go ahead.
I don't want any male who might be listening to tonight's show to hear that it's so much more difficult for them. It's not, guys. It's not. All you got to do is find the right person again.
Go to a counselor who knows that what trauma is, who is trauma trained. You know, pick another male to talk about from our group. There's plenty of us now, and there's more all the time. And you'll find that we're supportive. We're not going to throw you away. We're going to tell you to keep getting more and more involved. It's really a mental block. It's not a social block anymore, and it shouldn't be seen that way. I don't want to put that message out from me. I won't. Because I think once you get started, you're on your way, and it's the same for men as it is for women. It's the same. You know, so.
Yeah. Bill, I think over the years, okay, we have a lot of guys that come on. No, not a lot of guys. We have men that come on our show now. And I remember, don't forget, I've been around for almost 11 years now on NASCAR.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, there were so few. And now, thankfully, men are starting to speak up and speak out. We have our groups, the 1 in 6, that's one. And, of course, we speak about it on NASCAR. So much more, many more men are starting to come forward from when they were abused as children. And that's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's a positive
especially
thing.
With the church. Especially
very good.
With,
there you go,
know.
Yeah. That's right.
Hey, can I say something?
Sure, you sure can. Where have you been? There you are.
It's been noisy in the house over here in Madison, so I put it on mute during that, you know. Okay, so now I'm outside. So. But anyway, I noticed something I was reading the other day of this little girl that was being kidnapped from out in a schoolyard, and a strange lady just started dragging her. And luckily, the little girl spoke out and told the crossbar, I don't know this woman. I don't know why she's dragging me. And that lady was just 4'11" or 4'9". She was tiny herself, you know. But she ended up saving that little girl. And then I thought, you know what, if that would have been me, I don't think I would have been brave enough because we were so conditioned to remain silent. And I think how brave that little girl was. Speak out, you know, and say something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's just that we were conditioned to be quiet. And we might have said people wrong us at times, but we, as things happen, we don't know who was safe and who wasn't. Because a lot of people weren't safe, that we had trust to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'll bring that up.
That's good. Now, Lori, respond to it. Go ahead.
I don't know what I'm supposed to respond to. I was just...
Oh, okay.
I'm literally walking around my house looking for my phone, so I was distracted. Here it is. Okay.
There you go.
So, don't mind me.
It was about us being conditioned. Oh, sorry. That's about us.
I have to speak up. Yes. Yes.
Right. There wasn't safety around. Yes. Well, you didn't know who to
trust. If I understood
the story
right.
I think Bill's trying to say something. Go ahead.
Well, if I understood the story right, I think that she said it was a crossing guard that was told. I think that's, if it's not, that's an excellent idea. You know, if you live in an area where there are crossing guards, those are another set of people who are, you know, they're basically volunteer community members who go out twice a day to help kids get to school and from school. And, you know, anybody like that would be a great suggestion. So I would include crossing guards. I would include school nurses. If you're afraid of your teacher, you know, and you're afraid of the administrator, tell the nurse. So there are options. I just want these kids to know if the first person you tell, you know, doesn't work out, that's okay. Tell the next one. Just keep telling until you get the help you need. Don't worry about how many it takes. Just keep telling until you get the help you need. And then as far as the little girl in the story, obviously somebody taught her right. Somebody taught her to speak up. You know, she heard that. And on her way to school, she divorced. With this, that's a really great story from a couple of perspectives.
Yeah, she was leaving school. Yeah, it was time when they were leaving school, and the lady grabbed her and started pulling her across the street. So I'm glad that crossing guard listened to that girl. I don't know this woman. Why did she pull me across the street?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
It's a great story.
You know, I hadn't even thought about crossing guards. Yeah. I mean, we've never thought about crossing guards. I've never thought about a crossing guard. But you're right, because that is a good person to go to, for God's sake. Maybe they're mandated reporters. I don't know. But
no,
the point is, they do
just
serve.
Like a little girl. She was short, just like that little kid, and she was a lot shorter than the perpetrator, you know. But she told that little girl to wrap her legs around they kind of like wrapped her legs around each other or something like that. And, you know, they couldn't do it. She couldn't pull them both, in other words.
Wow.
She stopped it.
Amazing.
She did it.
Well,
that little
see,
kid died about 4 foot 9 or 4 foot 11.
This is why I'm a huge proponent of community policing. That's community policing. It doesn't matter that she's not law enforcement. She's a community member who is committed in one area, and that kind of proves her where her heart's at, this, the crossing guard. And if you teach the crossing guards this and say it might happen in the course of your volunteering here, just like the teachers, just like the nurse, just like the administrators, just like all police officers, and every community member becomes then an augmented force to help children. And this is all about public safety. And so there's no question, this is a giant public safety issue for our country. We don't see it that way, but that's what it is. And so it's all about us teaching each other through intervention, you know, prevention and intervention techniques, how to help children. And then, of course, the third thing is how to, if we have been abused, how to come forward. And NASCA is a huge resource for that, too. But I love the story.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was very well where you can actually hear something good, you know, not just the negative that's going around, but somebody actually took action and helped this little girl.
Great. And crossing guards, you know, Bill, that's a very interesting group of people, because they can see if a child's being pulled or is resisting, or you know, they really could be because if a kid's taken from school, they're out. They're part of, you know, be spotted by a crossing guard. I think that's a really good group of people, actually.
It makes me wonder what they did to this lady that grabbed him, and whether she's let out of jail to do that again or what.
Right. Well, that's what you were saying, Carol. You know, what happens to people, you know, the perpetrator, when they're put in jail, how early, soon do they get out, and what happens as a result, you know, in the aftermath of that. So that's a whole topic in and of itself.
But, you know,
this
show
lady deserves a medal. Oh, I'm sorry. She deserves a medal,
that's all right.
You know.
Yes, she does. She does, honey. I wish you'd been able to tell us. Yeah, now we only have 60 seconds.
Yeah.
I've got to wrap the show up.
Okay, well,
everybody out there,
now.
Everybody out there, you know, we're talking about being proactive. That's what we're talking about tonight. And if we become proactive as a society, we can help put that dent in the statistics. We can, but we have to become proactive. Go to the website, learn all the information you need to know, and then start to care, okay? All right. We had a different show tonight. It was a good show, a lot of information going back and forth. And tomorrow night we're going to have a guest on. And good night.
Tomorrow night we're going to have a person who has a PhD in public safety. I think people would want to come on and hear it.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
what time is that?
Yeah, that'll be great. But I have to close the show out now.
Okay.
Well, it's 8 p.m. Yeah, Eastern Standard Time. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever time you have now is the time you'd come on. All right. So anyway, we'll see you tomorrow night. Good night. God bless. And people, start caring. Amen.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye bye. Good night.
God bless. That's gone with them. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.